Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Ross, Judge Ryder, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. We have, welcome to the Court of Appeals, by the way, September 11, a day we ought not to forget, I suspect. We have the first matter, White's Company versus Zitting Brothers Construction, A-190070. We're missing one attorney by intention, by design. We did get correspondence from counsel for respondent that they, I think the phrase was withdrew objection, and so we'll proceed with the appellant. You'll have 15 minutes, of course. There's no need for rebuttal since we have no counsel for respondent this morning. And so as soon as you're ready to proceed, you may identify yourself for the record, and then you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Richard Caldicott, and I represent the defendant appellant in this matter, Zitting Brothers Construction. The facts of this appeal are really fairly straightforward. This is a fight about costs and disbursements of a little over $100,000. There were three defendants initially involved in this case. The first one was ZB Holdings, and they were dismissed out of the case on a settlement that specifically said that each of the parties would pay their own costs, disbursements, and attorney's fees. The second defendant was also dismissed out of the case on the night before trial. That's Mr. Sam Zitting. Mr. Zitting was one of my two clients in this matter. Mr. Zitting's settlement agreement was also that each party would pay their own costs, disbursements, and attorney's fees. The third party in the case that I also represented was Zitting Brothers Construction Company, which was Mr. Zitting's construction company. They went to trial and got a verdict on behalf of the plaintiff for roughly half of what they were asking the jury for. At the conclusion of the trial, of course, they sought costs and disbursements. The problem that we have, but the key problem that we have is that no full faith and credit has been given to any settlement agreement here. The trial court just simply took the $100,000 in costs and disbursements that plaintiffs sought, subtracted a de minimis $104 on one small thing, and granted them all the rest of the expenses. There was no attempt to allocate the expenses. There was no real attempt to show that the expenses were reasonable. There was no attempt to show for expert witness costs what the hourly rate was that they were charging, the number of hours they put in, the hourly or the standard in the community for the type of expense and what would be a reasonable occurrence. In essence, the trial court just decided to give them almost everything that they wanted.
Well, didn't they request, I'm just going to round up or say, $195,000 or $200,000?
Initially,
and the trial court knocked that down to, let's say, 100 and some.
104,000, roughly, I call
it. And the bulk of that was made up of the expert fee?
Correct.
And your opponents submitted 88 pages of...
Right, with no hourly breakdown, with no discussion in her brief about, or in her submission about... what was a normal or standard fee in that area, with no showing how critical or uncritical, and I suppose we disagree with that. I think that their expert witness that they paid $100,000 for, or just shy $99,000 for, added almost nothing to their trial presentation. He was an entertaining witness, and he was tall and gracious, and I'm sure that we'd all like to put somebody on that on the stand when we could, but didn't really add much of anything to the case. I wanted to briefly distinguish.
Can I just ask the same judge who addressed the costs presided over the trial?
Yes, there's no question that as to at least some of what went on, the trial judge could see it, but they were asking for expenses for things that we couldn't see. I think the best way to respond to your concern, if I'm understanding it correctly, is to ask you to turn to page 8 of our brief and notice the 7 different discrete bullet points that we set forth in that brief, where there were expenses incurred for all of these things. They're not related to anything that had anything to do with Zitting Brothers Construction. They're all related to Mr. Sam Zitting's individual personal guarantee allegation and also his fraud claim in response to their request for a personal guarantee, and also to ZB Holdings' guarantee claim. what's happened here is that you've just lumped everything together, given no credit, no full faith to any of the settlement agreements, and dumped the whole $100,000 on us. I do want to distinguish one
case. Can I ask a question about your remedy?
Sure.
You look to be asking us for a reversal and remand. Remand to do what? And yeah. How does the position of your opponent recently revealed to us affect that remedy?
Thank you for that question. In our conclusion, we request that the court order that all dispenses be denied for litigation against ZB Holdings and Sam Zitting personally. We further request the order that the trial court be ordered to take a look at all expenses, what the case law says, a hard look at all the expenses for litigating against Zitting Brothers Construction. And finally, we request the court direct the trial court to examine plaintiff's very large expert witness fee with respect to the number of hours that were put in, the expertise in the case, and what type of hourly rate is customary for that type of work. Alternatively, our home run, obviously, that we would love you to do is to just say that this litigation needs to stop. They had all the time in the world to bring as many different claims as they wanted, and they chose not to show up, not to fight about any of this, and just order it dismissed, and the expense is not granted as to a single dollar.
Often when there are multiple parties that an expert is preparing testimony for, reviewing things for, that's so intertwined that it's hard to parse out what the preparation is for one party. So if we were to remand it to the district court, how's the district court going to do that?
Sure. The Domtar case is what they cite for your proposition. The Domtar case is a case that started in 1933 and appears to have ended in 1995. It's what I think we nowadays would call a Superfund environmental cleanup case. There were multiple companion cases brought together, and in that case, the court said that it wasn't necessary to allocate expenses between the three defendants. I think that case has absolutely no factual analogousness to the case before you today. This is three simple defendants. They can mark down in their timesheets, as all of us do. We all fill out timesheets when we're doing hourly work, and we put what we did. If I'm responding to Zitting Brothers Construction's summary judgment motion, and I'm incurring a motion filing fee, and I'm incurring other charges and expenses, then I put that on my timesheet. If, on the other hand, I'm fighting Sam Zitting's fraud claim against me for bringing a personal guarantee action against him that we felt was meritless, then on the defendant's timesheets, it should show to fighting off Mr. Zitting's fraud claim, and the expenses for costs and disbursements associated with those things. My personal timesheets, I write them right up in the corner, my mileage, my parking, and my other expenses when I incur the time. Plaintiffs have an opportunity to do that if they want, and I sure would agree with you that it's a certain amount of work to go through to do all these things, but that's what the case law has required. The case law doesn't say, take a summary, quick look at this thing and approve it all. It's the case law is very clear. Take a hard look at these things. It doesn't really say a jaundiced look, but the impression I got is don't let people pile on after they've won a case by getting a whole bunch of different expenses. And so I think it's totally legitimate for them to be forced to go back, and if they want to try and collect their one-third. I'm not really sure how to interpret their letter that they sent to the court, whether they're giving up, and the concern you raise about putting additional work on a trial court to go back and try and parse out one-third versus two-thirds by looking at timesheets or having I'm assuming a special master would be appointed to do that. I would assume the trial court wouldn't do it. And whether that has any value. Perhaps the argument that I should be making is just simply, since they're not here and since they didn't challenge it, you don't have to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, issue a ruling. Have a good day.